All right, good afternoon, good afternoon. Welcome to the Eagle's Nest. My name is Arnold Jolivet II. So excited to be here with you for our brand new show, The Eagle's Nest, here on WOLB 1010 AM. You can reach us at 1010 AM WOLB locally on your radio or WOLBBaltimore.com. Our call-in number is 410-481-1010. That's 410-481-1010. I'm absolutely honored to be on the airwaves with you all today and really excited to have in studio live as our guest today, the Reverend Al Hathaway, senior pastor of Union Baptist Church, historic Union Baptist Church. Welcome to the show, Reverend Hathaway. How are you today?
Good morning. How you doing? In fact, good afternoon. It is a exciting day. In fact, I'm happy to be in this cool place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. The AC is working, so we are cool right now. We also have in studio Kimberly Wilson, who is an educator with the D.C. public school system. Miss Wilson, how are you this fine afternoon?
I'm good. Staying cool as well.
That's right.
All right. Welcome. Well, on the eve of the 4th of July, traffic started to get heavy as we were driving into the studio, and everyone is going to their cookouts and celebrations, and there are going to be fireworks all over the country. One thing that we wanted to talk about on the eve of Independence Day, one, what is actual true independence, not just Independence Day, but independence as a whole, and also the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So it's a very timely discussion. We encourage you to call in at 410-481-1010 to share your thoughts. But Reverend Hathaway, I wanted to just share with you, and I wanted to just get your viewpoints on where we are as a whole with Independence Day. What are some of your thoughts on it? And as we reflect on the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, I know you've worked in the civil rights arena. You know, you've been in the trenches. You've really been a great advocate for not just civil rights, but human rights as well. So what are some of your thoughts on that?
Well, I think my thoughts really are threefold. First, I believe that we should not, even though I do celebrate and laud the accomplishments of what we know as the civil rights movement, I think we have to go just a step further and look at the whole progression that we did coming out of Emancipation Proclamation. I think we start, we cut our story short by starting it in the middle. So we are part of a continuum. That's the first thing. The second thing that I would say is that we have to be careful that we do not translate freedom for some as an excuse for freedom for all. Mm. And so the whole idea was that we would move everybody's boat. We would lift everybody's boat. Independence and the ideals of our American Constitution would be available to everybody. And I think we are dangerously on the precipice of celebrating just a few accomplishments and not celebrating the whole. And then the third thing I think is that it's a woeful time when freedom and independence and equality is just on the lips of a few and not on the lips of a many.
Wow. That's powerful. That's powerful. And as we move forward, looking at what actual freedom is, you know, freedom is different in different eyes. You know, some people may look as freedom as the ability to be able to just take care of themselves, make sure all their needs are met. And some people may say freedom is having the ability to make sure that other people get free as well. So what do you feel are some of the solutions as we move forward? What can we do as our listeners? If someone's listening today, what can they do, or how can they get involved to making sure that freedom is real?
Well, let's on a couple of different fronts. You know, I sit here and I share with you. I always read on the 4th of July. I read the statement by Frederick Douglass that he made back in 1852, and it's just so amazing how relevant and sage his insights were. First, I think that what he understood, and I think what we all need to understand, is, as I said earlier, is that education is a key. Hmm. Education should be a non-negotiable. We should agree that within each of our communities that we have quality education. We saw education as when you look back in our history, we fought to make certain that there were quality education. I come out of a faith community that sued to ensure that there were equal rights, equal pay for Negro and white teachers. We fought to have Douglas as the first in our city public high school. I mean, we always were about education. And I think now we've kind of given that away. And so that education is not a non-negotiable, and we have to make that a non-negotiable. Second thing that we have to make certain that we do is that we have to make certain that political involvement is not just for the political season.
Mm.
Political involvement has to be year round. It is always the interaction because the definition of politics is the distribution of limited benefits. And so we've got to make certain that we are a part of that process by which the benefits of the political system are distributed equally and fairly and freely all the time. And then the third area I think we've got to really look at critically if you're going to talk about independence is the system of capitalism the only system by which we can have economic freedom and justice? And I think that that there's many flaws in that system, and we're kind of being buttonholed into that system because that system of capitalism only really benefits the select few.
Right. That's powerful. And you mentioned the educational system, and it really starts from babies, you know, from childhood, you know, as far as that whole education process. And that's where I really want to bring you in, Kim. And, you know, being an educator, actually being, again, in the trenches with the children each and every day, is that independence as a whole, or that education, is that stressed in the school systems as far as helping the children become more independent from the lower levels?
I do believe that education has to be a non-negotiable. The problem in the school systems is that our children don't value it oftentimes, and also the parents. So how do you teach a child to value education? So many times they're taking for granted what so many of our ancestors didn't have access to.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to understand the history behind that and the work and responsibility behind becoming independent or having a school system that they have now. Our children do not value education, so we must teach them somehow how to value it.
Yeah, I think you're right. There has been a almost I hate to borrow from Carter G. Bush, almost a miseducation. And the miseducation is that there is a quick way. That there is some kind of magic bullet. There's some kind of magic lyric or magic rap, or there's something that I can do. There's some instant dunk, or there's some home run to hit. Not realizing that everything requires preparation.
Mm.
And everything requires development. And so we celebrate the accomplishment and don't look at the process by which that accomplishment is developed. And that is done through education. So you're right, my sister. We have to lift up to our young people and to families that they have to say education is the passport.
Right.
In our society, it is the passport.
Now, Rev, how do you balance the education that we have from the literal meaning of education in the schools to the practical education that takes place, you know, for lack of a better term, on the streets or what's actually taught at home? How do we balance and combine the two? Because education is a holistic approach, not just what is actually taught in the schools.
Well, you know, give me an example. Russell Simmons, brother who has just shown through his creative genius and business acumen how he can develop a economic system. He's looking through New York. He looks around. He looks and he sees graphic tagging on buildings. And he sees some amazing things. He said, wow, who's doing that? He comes and identifies and finds out that there was a gentleman, a young man who was doing this graphic tagging. He brings that young man into his business, and that young man became the head of his graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is talent that is being developed in our communities. We've got to be able to identify that talent, let that talent know that there is a very equitable, very profitable and very legal ways by which their talent can become an income stream for themselves and their families.
Wow, that's powerful. Well, I see we have one call on the line. I'm going to go out here and see if I can grab Myron on line one. So if we could bring Myron on line one up. Myron, you're on the air in the Eagle's Nest. How are you?
It's Byron with a B.
All right, Byron, welcome to the show.
How y'all doing?
Doing great.
First of all, we have to stop looking at the average guy on the street and start looking at the guys with the diplomas and the three-piece suits. Those people are selling us out. When you go to the table and you sign off on no-bid contracts, things like that, that's shutting black folks out right there. Because what they're doing is they're giving contracts to people who put money into their campaign as a favor. No longer are they taking bags of money on an empty parking lot. They're giving them jobs. They're giving people jobs who aren't qualified. Affirmative action is not being enforced like it's supposed to be. You know, we got laws to help us, but nothing's being enforced. When you got a state's attorney who spends $11 million on an office and already had an office, that's enough money to fund summer jobs for kids for a couple of years. You know, and we sit back and we let politicians basically take money and spend it like it's their money, and we don't say anything. I had mentioned the $11 million he spent on an office, and I didn't hear a peep about it. It's like insane, like we don't even, it's like we're asleep.
Wow.
These people to do things, you know. That's why I voted for Ms. Mosby, because she said that she would get this backlog of thousands of people who have violent warrants. It's not a lot of people in our community that's committing crime and doing things. It's the same people repeating violent things, and it's hurting our community.
Well, Byron, I appreciate you. I appreciate your input. Let me ask you
real quick.
Sure.
And she also wants an 83% to do 83% of their time, because when you have some people that are just not going to do right. Just like when kids go to school, you have very bright kids who are afraid to go to school because of the environment. When you put 35, 40, 50 kids in the classroom, that's ridiculous. When you go to private school, there's what, maybe 20 kids in the classroom? But when our schools are like that, what do they want to do? They want to shut them down because they want to pile all our kids into a classroom. You can't teach 40 or 50 kids. You just can't have a one-on-one with 40 or 50 kids. And when you have kids that are disrupting the class and nothing's being done, that's the main problem why a lot of our kids aren't learning. They're very bright. You know,
Byron, let me ask you one question. Let me ask you one question. Byron, let me ask you one question. Based on what you've seen, and you obviously made some great points, what would you propose as a solution that we can begin to do, or some of our listeners, what do you propose as a solution to solve some of these issues?
The solution is to go after these violent criminals with these warrants and stop arresting people for frivolous things like urination, sitting on the corner.
No, what can we do? What can we do? What can a listener?
Really,
what can a listener, Byron? What can a listener do? And we appreciate your call.
What we can do? We as black folks, we need to turn these guys in, because I'm gonna tell you, when you see them committing crimes, the next person might be you or your family. Stop this dumb thing about snitching. It's not snitching when somebody's tearing up your community. That person needs to be locked up and do their full time. And like I said, stop harassing any and every black person on the street for dumb stuff, and go after the people who's really hurting our community. But see, they don't want to do that because it's money in crime and it's money in racism.
Well, Byron, I appreciate you calling in, man. We definitely will take note of that, and our listeners as well. So we appreciate you calling in. Continue to listen,
bro,
and support the program. Byron brought up some points, some key points here. What would you have to say just to expound on what he talked about?
You know, it's interesting, and I understand the sense of frustration. I was born in Baltimore, raised in Baltimore, grew up in Baltimore. In fact, grew up in the Upton area. The church I serve in is a block I grew up in. And so I look at that block now some 50-some years later, and it's not the same block that I remember 50 years earlier. 50 years, we did have a true sense of community. My family needed to borrow some sugar, they could go right up the street and they could get it from someone and just ask them that, and you did. We went to our little corner store. You didn't have to pay because you could have a tab.
Right.
And so you got things. I mean, it was a different kind of community. The Iceman came by, you knew the Iceman. The coal man came by, you knew the coal man. The milkman left milk on the steps. Nobody would take your milk because that was your milk. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had a different sense of community. And our challenge becomes is that some way we lost that identity of community. And so as a result, we're being areas where people are anonymous. We don't know the name of the person who's even next door. And anonymity, I believe, is a sin. And we have to be careful that we do not curse the darkness and not seek to light a candle, because in our city is small enough and manageable enough that you literally can know everybody.
Right.
And I think that persons who operate outside of a culture or perceive that the culture is over and against them need to get engaged in the culture and become known and begin to know the players that's a part of the culture.
Wow, that's powerful. And actually talking about that, Reverend Kim, everything rises and falls with leadership. Okay, so what can be done as far as the leadership? The leadership, does it work from the bottom up all the way up to the leadership, or does it work from the top down in setting the tone? So, for example, in the education system, does it work from the teacher being in the trenches all the way up to the principal, or is it the principal, is it people in the school system here in Baltimore, North Avenue, that set the tone for what's taking place, as Byron mentioned, about the schools, the school sizes, and being able to actually get to the students and make an impact for them to be able to, as Reverend Hathaway said, get that education to be able to have a long-term success?
Honestly, it's going to take us all. It's going to take leaders in the household to make sure their children value education. It's going to take leaders in the classroom to go to the trenches to communicate with the parents to understand what the children need. It's going to take the educator to communicate to the politicians what's really needed. Is it all these tests? Are we teaching what really needs to be taught? Are we being effective? We need leaders in the classrooms must communicate to the principals, to the politicians, so they're enacting laws that are really effective,
right,
that are really helpful.
Let me ask you something on that note. I know that there are a lot of standardized tests that take place and a lot of goals that the school system must meet. Do you feel that the focus has been more on meeting those goals and looking at numbers as opposed to actually having tangible results with the kids?
Actually, yes, I agree with that. We're looking at the numbers. I have a child, you know, who can do these wonderful calculations but does not know how to communicate with the child sitting next to them. We're not teaching practical life skills. That's not the focus, because that's not on the test. That's not going to determine whether or not we make our test goals and whether or not the school stays open. Okay. So we're not focusing on that. We're focusing on what determines whether or not the school will be open. So we're not teaching the life skills. And unfortunately, our children are not getting those at home. You know, in the past, that was taught at home by your community, and it's not happening enough.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Reverend Hathaway, because as you mentioned, the churches, before, it was always the rock of the neighborhood. And you mentioned Union Baptist Church, which is the rock in that area on Drood Hill Avenue. But what is the church's role? Has the church's role changed over the last 50 years, 100 years in helping to grow and develop those leaders to help to create that independence? What do you see as the church's role? Well, let me ask you two questions. What role has the church fallen into, and what do you see as being a productive role of the church to help aid in that situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me see if I can be succinct in answering it. One of the challenges that happened coming out of the Great Society movement of Johnson was that it almost created for the church, and I'm talking about the African-American church in the urban area, that they are like a social service agency. Mm-hmm. That was a trap. The church is not a social service agency. It may have social service dimensions, but at its core, it's an empowerment agency. It's an empowerment entity, a spiritually empowering, economically empowering, academically and aesthetically empowering. And what has happened is that sometimes churches have fallen into the trap that they are a social service agency, and the people outside of the community that will interact with the church perceive it as such. Mm-hmm. So they come to it for something, to extract something out of it, not realizing that they have to invest something in. So that's been a trap. The second thing, which I believe that the church has to do, is the church, God created the church to address systems and systemic evil and systemic wrong and systemic injustice. And so the church really has to have a strategy whereby it addresses systemic issues. And we have to train and develop leadership that's able to understand how to assess systems and determine those places where there are inequities and deal with them. I'll give you a classic example. Mm-hmm. I gotta really laud the memory and the accomplishments of Reverend Vernon Dobson, who saw early on the need during the 1968 to create a Head Start program. Mm-hmm. So for 45 years, we've been running a Head Start program. Some 7,000 children have come through that program.
Wow.
But when they went into the third grade, we were noticing that they were regressing. So what now the next strategy? We know we got childhood education, now you've got to go into those local schools. So we went into Furman Templeton, changed that from a school. Edison out of New York had it. We took it, made a community-based charter school, went into Samuel Coleridge Taylor. They wanted to put that off the list, saved that. Now we built a, we got a $1 million library there, just built a playground there. We're going to expand that. Booker T. Washington was the middle school, now changed that curriculum, doing wonderful things there. Went to University of Maryland School of Social Work. You need to put social workers in the school. Mm-hmm. We need to make certain that the dental school is there, mm-hmm. that everybody get fluoride treatment. All of that has to happen inside of a local community because we've got to change systems.
Right. Wow. And that's so true because I learned a long time ago it's so much better to rely on systems than rely on people.
No question.
So that's great. Well, as we move on to that, and I want to come back to that because I have a question for you. We have actually a caller on the line. We have a guest caller on the line as well. This gentleman is by the name of Brian Hammond. And the reason that Brian is called in today is because this gentleman, who is actually a product of Morgan State University, has done some really amazing things in the business world. And we talk about capitalism and we talk about education being important for freedom, especially financial freedom. So, Brian, I wanted to bring you in briefly. Thank you. I appreciate you coming into the show. I just wanted you to talk a little bit. I know your company focuses on technology and technology-based solutions, but can you just share with us briefly just about your story, how you went from corporate America phasing into entrepreneurship, and what was the real reason that you chose to take your own destiny in your hand and becoming a business owner? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Most times that entrepreneurs, you know, become entrepreneurs, there's usually a tipping point in your life that happens. And for me, it's no different. I was with a big corporate, you know, Fortune 100 company, employee of the year, and 2 weeks later, I was downsized. So I found myself 15 years in, gave it all I had, and said, wow, I can probably do this for myself. And started down that path. My first journey was to partner with a friend who went to Michigan, a B school, started a company dealing with avionics engineering. I became the chief marketing officer there. And then from that experience, I decided that, you know what, I could probably do my own thing. And so I launched my company, Stafford Lewis & Ellicott, LLC. We call it BLE. So that started my first company. And as we grew, that company ended up being in five cities throughout the South. Still have a lot of those, the three of the offices still operating. Then in 2010, thinking about this freedom, we launched a new company dealing with litigation support, helping law firms get ready for trial, called E-Doc Technologies. We launched that. And really, the whole thing behind that is the economy crashed. We took some hits like everybody else. And I just wanted to have multiple streams of income. And so we launched E-Doc Technologies in 2010. Out of Washington, D.C., and that company is going strong. Actually, we just opened a new office in Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow, that's great news. In an area where, as you said, there's downsizing, left-sizing, right-sizing, cutbacks, your company is actually flourishing and growing. What would you say to that that person who is, they have that entrepreneurial spirit, they want to move forward, but they just don't know or just don't know if they can make it or step out on faith to start their own business? What would you say to that person that's listening right now who may be on the fence as to whether or not the whole entrepreneurial spirit is what they should be doing, or if they should just stay where they actually are?
Yeah, great question. The first thing I would tell them is to read as much as they can about what other folks have experienced in jumping out there in the marketplace. And then two, find a mentor, someone who has done it before, and partner with them and ask all the questions, go to their office, spend a day with them, and do all those things. Okay.
Okay, great. Well, I know your time is very limited. One other thing I want to ask you is I know you deal a lot with technology. A lot of people today are afraid of technology, afraid of, for no reason, to want to get into it. How have you used technology with your business to help have a global presence? What has technology done, and how can people be encouraged to use technology for their benefit?
Well, one of the things I will say is technology is not going anywhere. You know, when I was in high school in the late 70s, this new thing called computers was coming on board. And today, 2014, people are still talking about the new age of technology and computers. It's not going away. I'd say embrace it, engage it. There are so many free opportunities and libraries and local programs that you can join. But I'd say embrace it, find something that you're interested in. For me, I started going to CompUSA. They're no longer in business. I started going there and tinkering and learning from the tech heads and became a techie myself through that experience. And since then, my companies, we do is technology. And it all started with me just inquiring about what's a gigabyte. It started that simple.
No, awesome. And if someone wants to get in contact with you to use your company services or to find out more how they can get involved and be technologically astute, how can they reach you?
Well, they could go to www.theblegroup.com, and we have courses that we teach technology. We have free seminars that we do. We're actually gearing up for a big seminar at the end of this month here in Columbia, Maryland. So folks can call us at 877-TRI-BLE-1, 877-TRI-BLE-1. Contact us, and we'll get you in the class for free. We do have some paid courses, but we are on into giving back to the community and making sure people are comfortable. And so that's why we do a lot of free seminars and workshops for the community.
Awesome. We appreciate you calling in. Continued much success to you and your business, and enjoy your holiday weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Enjoy the show. You guys have a great weekend as well.
Appreciate it. Well, again, we're here on 1010 WOLB AM. Our call-in number is 410-481-1010. We are also live at WOLBBaltimore.com. That's WOLBBaltimore.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we will see you all on the other side. We'll be right back.
1010 WOLB.
Hey, is that a faucet running?
Nope, that's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest.
It is?
Yeah. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink. The water comes straight from the forest to us, in fact.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
How do trees clean the air?
They soak up the dirty air on their leaves, branches, and trunks, which means clean air for us.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yep. But the forest does more than give us clean air and water. It gives us shade for hot days, birds to listen to, and trees to climb.
Wow. That's awesome. I didn't know how cool the forest could be. Hey, let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does, just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
1010 WOLB, where information is power.
All right, welcome back to the Eagle's Nest. Again, my name is Arnold Jolivet II. So excited to be here with you live on the air, WOLB 1010 AM and WOLBBaltimore.com. We have live in studio Reverend Al Hathaway, Senior Pastor of Union Baptist Church, and also Kimberly Wilson, Educator in D.C. Public School Systems. And we're just really talking about independence on the eve of this July 4th Independence Day. We're talking about just not the actual Independence Day and what that means, but we're talking about overall independence in education and what it takes to really become independent and move forward in that manner. So we're going to actually get right back into that. I wanted to just speak with Reverend Hathaway briefly. We just had Brian Hammond, who came in and talked a little bit about the whole business aspect and the entrepreneurial aspect of freedom. And Rev, what are some of your thoughts on that, and what are your feelings as we talk about entrepreneurship, we talk about business, we talk about becoming free, and we know that financial freedom is not free. There's some sacrifice and things that need to take place. But just share whatever's on your heart and mind about that.
Well, I was really happy to hear Brother Hammond, because what he emphasized was not specifically the type of business, but he also emphasized, which is very important, is that innovation is what drives American economy. We are an economy of innovators. And I think that our people within our local communities in our neighborhoods need to understand that. Let me give you two examples. There was a young man. His name was Tristan Walker. Tristan Walker had a problem, African-American male, with shaving. He says, wow, wait a minute. I need to create a better way of shaving. So he created a company, Bevel. That is basically going back to the old style way my father would shave. He says we can innovate on how they can do that. He just recently got $7.5 million to expand his company simply because he looked at a need and developed an innovative way to address that need. Another young man, he came out of Baltimore. In fact, he was he went to Calvert Hall, so I know that should make you smile. But he also went to West Virginia University, went to Howard University, got a master's in integrated marketing at West Virginia, got an MBA at Howard. He went to work for a large company and realized that, wait a minute, one of the problems with the music industry is that people were doing illegal downloads. Mm. How can we create a way in which we can have listeners go and do legal downloads because they get that you incentivize that? Mm. And he developed a company called Listener. Mm. A Listener basically allows for content to be delivered to those persons where they get extra incentives from music or from any business. He just got $3.5 million to expand that business. So it's just, how do we look at our systems? Mm-hmm. How do we look at our economy and think innovatively mm-hmm. about improvements? Mm-hmm. Everybody has a mind, mm-hmm. and everybody should use that mind to better our society. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to tell you that when you do that, there are resources that follow that.
Wow, that's powerful. And I always learned that, you know, there's always a need when you look at solving a problem.
Exactly.
When you have a solution-based business, you know, people, there may be a saturation of a particular product, but when you look at solving whatever issue, what a problem is, like you mentioned about the downloading, the illegal downloading, there are millions of dollars that are available when you help to do that. So that's great. Well, I see we have another caller on the line. That's line two, and this name looks familiar. This says that this is Arnold Jolivet. Mr. Jolivet, are you on air?
Arnold M. Jolivet,
and the M is for money, right?
The M is for much money.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome to the show.
Now, well, thank you so much. Now, because I know my lovely wife is listening, I want to say good morning to her first, and then I want to say good morning to you, and then I want to say good morning to my pastor, the Reverend Dr. Alvin C. Hathaway Sr., who is my leader, who carries me this far of the way. And besides, I need to tell him how much he means to me and the congregation at Union Baptist Church. And with that, I really should just hang up. But I do want to say, Arnold, I'm so proud of you. And Reverend Hathaway has even suggested to me that once he gets, once he is in the need of a guest preacher, you may even be considered.
Yeah, I'm interviewing him right now. He thinks he's interviewing me.
Well, that would actually be an honor. But we appreciate you calling in. We appreciate, you know, we talk about freedom and fighting for freedom. We know that that's something that you've done for well over 40 years and fighting for the freedom.
Did you tell Reverend Hathaway I'm retiring?
You just told him.
I told Reverend Hathaway. I didn't tell, and I apologize. But yesterday I went to the Board of Estimates, and I announced my retirement. And I gave flowers to the mayor and the city council, Ms. Joan Pratt, and all of the members of the Board of Estimates, except the men. Now, I know that is a surprise, because, Arnold, I didn't even tell you. I did tell your mother. But on the other hand, let me just finish by simply saying you all are talking about freedom, and Reverend Hathaway is one of the great freedom fighters of our time, but there's something missing, and I just want you all to understand what my motto is. Economic freedom is not free. If we're going to demand freedom, we got to be willing to pay a little bit of up for it. So with that in mind, Arnold, I want to thank you for being more as transformative as your mother.
All right.
You need to understand, you got quite a bit to go before you get transformed as your father.
All right. Well, we appreciate the call. And again, appreciate everything that you've done for the freedom fight. So I look forward to talking to you soon.
Blessed assurance.
All right.
Blessed assurance.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you.
So, and that really speaks to what I was going to actually follow up with you with, Reverend Hathaway, is the business that actually the business side of the faith base of the churches and dealing with that business side with the church, because the church is actually is a business. It's big business.
Yeah.
So how do we develop that side? You mentioned what churches, how they're seen, what the perception is, and how do churches walk that line between developing its membership, between developing the community, and the difference between a handout and a hand up?
Yeah, you know, one of the challenges in the faith community, and you have to, and I think you're right in terms of it is a business model, is that if you look at it, its business model may be somewhat flawed. And as a result of its business model being flawed, you find a high rate of closures of faith communities that have been historic, or you find them dwindling, or you find them draining. I think that the challenge for the faith community is it able to learn from business practices that would suggest that you can consolidate and that you can merge? And I think we haven't gotten to that point yet. And I think that that's the next level that the faith community, particularly urban churches, need to begin to understand. Can we merge? Can we consolidate? Can we join together in such a way that we become stronger?
Mm-hmm.
You see that in the corporate sector. Can you imagine Men's Warehouse buys Joseph Banks?
Mm-hmm.
So they get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You just in the days new, you had a lawn service company buy another lawn service company. Mm-hmm. So it can get stronger. We haven't learned that in our community. How do we merge and consolidate so that we can get stronger? As a result, we focus in on our individual business practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that does not allow us to have the kind of impact in our local communities that we should have. Now, give me another case in point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple thing. We should just consolidate and merge on our outreach efforts.
Mm.
If we did that, can you imagine the kind of synergy that we could have,
right,
in terms of people, in terms of resources, and even in terms of impact? So we've got to send the message. If we're going to be free,
mm-hmm,
we should be free to also merge and consolidate, mm-hmm, our efforts so that we have greater impact.
Wow, that's powerful. And is that because everyone wants to take ownership of a particular program, of a particular event? They want to say it's my event or this organization's event, and not willing to merge, to share in it? Or where does that all begin?
I think it's two things. I think it's one is that it takes so long for you to get in,
mm-hmm,
that you like it.
Okay.
And you don't want to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a short-sighted view. I think the other view is that we don't have a long-term view. If I was sitting in a Chinese business would plan for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge that we've got to have in our communities. Can we plan for a 100-year term?
Mm-hmm.
And because we have not, we keep reacting to just the blips that happen in our cultural times and place. And there's not a aim or goal that we are shooting for. As a result, we end up at the whims of politicians.
Right.
Politicians' terms, by definition, are limited.
Mm-hmm.
And because of their limitations, we now have done something in the African-American community that's not done in other communities. You don't make the politicians the leaders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In other communities, the business, the educators,
mm-hmm,
the religious leaders are the leaders, and the politician serves as a support,
right,
for their leadership. And that's the inversion that we've got to correct if we're going to move our community forward.
Wow, that's powerful. And it's really, like you said, it's backwards, where the politicians should be working for us in the community. We end up working for them and really are subject to what they do. And when they leave, we're left high and dry.
Exactly.
We live high and dry. Now, does that also starts out in the school system? Do you see, based on your day-to-day work, that students are encouraged to work together? I know when I was in school, we would have group projects, and we would have to come together. Whether you liked that person or not, you were assigned a group that you had to work with in order to fulfill a certain project, and you had a timeline to do it. Does that still take place in the school system today? Are students encouraged to work together?
They are, but it's secondary to making the test goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so more emphasis is placed on individual student achievement versus, mm-hmm, the achievement of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem in our society, but in, yeah, the school system as well. We're not taught to work together. We're not tested on working together and how well we achieve as a group. It's a lot of individual recognition. And so our students don't understand the power of the team, of the group, or even the value of that. And we do need to implement that back into the school systems. And I wanted to comment on something that you said earlier, how we're reacting. And we're doing that in the school systems, too.
Yeah.
The kids aren't learning. Oh, let's put the test in place. Now let's take a test. We're not really looking at the long term goals and the whole child. What does it take to develop the whole child? We're just reacting to to different opinions or what's going on, and we kind of need to look at that and come up with a long-term plan that's in alignment with what our church leaders are doing, what's going on at home, what other community organizations, what the politicians are doing. We must all be in alignment so that our children reach their full potentials and so that the educational system really works. But like right now, we are functioning as individual systems reacting to problems versus creating a long-term goal and working on that.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it is somewhat disheartening that we do not have a cohesive strategy that we as a community buy into. And I think what the reason why that is that there, when I was young, we had a race consciousness. Mm-hmm. We were advancing the race. And so all that we were doing was to advance the race. We were courteous to seniors because we respected their wisdom. We were courteous to women because we respected the role that they played in our culture. And I think we celebrated success because it was seen as an advancement of the race. Mm-hmm. What we've created now is a kind of a critique that is really not helpful, because we immediately will critique or would chastise or would alienate elements within our own community, and as a result, it's not seen that we're advancing the race. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've got to, and it happens in schools. One of the challenges in our schools is that if you don't learn about your race in schools, mm-hmm. how are you going to come to know it?
Right.
And one of the real things, and I was really upset about this with our previous CEO of our schools. Mm-hmm. He went and eliminated names that has historic significance and created these obtuse names of schools. Mm-hmm. So for example, Diggs Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Man, the role of Mr. Diggs and the role of Harvey Johnson in Baltimore City, and Huge. You would eliminate that name, mm-hmm. and create Southwest Tech or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to have, if you don't have names, if you don't have monuments, if you don't have places where people can go and remember who they are, and you could point to young people to say that you are a proud people, that there is a race, that's a challenge. I'll give you this one more piece.
Mm-hmm.
One of the very disturbing things is that when you look at the historic African-American community of West Baltimore, to see that these historic properties that had so much significance are abandoned and vacant.
Right.
No community would allow that, and mm-hmm. we should not allow that in this city.
Wow, that's powerful. And really, it helps. You know, one thing you talked about growing up is having that link, having that that oral tradition, so to speak, where your grandmother told you stories and it passed down to your father, to your mother, and then you were able to share those stories. So that was beyond what we learned in the schools. That was the link to our heritage, to our history. So as you mentioned, when you talked about just taking those names away, that really helped take away the link. It helped take away the pride that you have and who you are, and being able to relate to a Harvey Johnson, you know, to be able to relate to someone who had not just a significance nationally on a broad basis, but had significance right in your neighborhood.
Right.
You know, we talked last week about Thurgood Marshall,
right.
and all the great things that he did. But when you stop talking about that, when you stop educating about that, you ask a couple, you know, a kid on the street today who was Thurgood Marshall, they wouldn't even know who you're talking about.
Right.
You know, they say, oh, you know, that's the name of the airport, you know,
right.
but really just understanding what that significance is. And there's so many other models for us to take a look at. If you look at the Koreans, if you look at, you know, what other people are doing and how they grow their children up to be in the business, to become self-sufficient. You know, I have another business associate who's Greek, and he takes the time to make sure that the children, not just his own children, but anybody connected in that community, understand what's going on and they understand that heritage. So until we to make the effort to do that, it's really going to be slow to change.
Well, I got to emphasize something that your father said, and he was right about the whole idea of economics as an element of freedom. And the challenge that we have within our community is that we do not value our own dollar, and we're so easy to give it away. We're so easy to spend it for and not receive value for it. And as a result, that piece, which could be an element of our empowerment, is sucked right out of us. And so when I grew up, I didn't know that you would go to foreign nationals to do business, mm-hmm. there were people in your community who looked like you that you did business with. Mm-hmm. And so this that we've accepted the idea that we will spend our money with foreign nationals, I don't have nothing against them, mm-hmm. but they're right embedded in our communities. Mm-hmm. And that we spend our money with them and not have a competing business that we own that can provide services in our community, that's really something that hits at, it makes us very dependent instead of being independent.
Absolutely. And do you feel that today, because sometimes even though we have the internet, even though we have, you know, a worldwide presence where you're able to just go online and see what's going on in Africa or see what's going on in Russia, do you feel that today as an independent person or business owner that most people feel whatever they do today towards maybe that progress that it doesn't really make a difference?
That's part of it. We're not seeing that our dollar rotate in our local communities and our local neighborhoods. And as a result, and I go back to my original premise, we don't value that dollar. I mean, why would I go and spend in a local corner store an exorbitant amount for an item when I could purchase that item in bulk? And we haven't learned. And one thing I want to hit that I believe our community has to begin to research, understand the cooperative model of doing business. If we don't do that, we will never win. I don't believe in a capitalistic system where everything is totally arrayed against us. So we've got to begin to understand cooperative models of doing business and begin to develop those models within our local community.
Wow. And there's something just popped in my head when you mentioned that. And I really asked both of you all this question. What can be done to get our young people's attention for something relative to the discussion, like you talked about, keeping the dollars in our own place, being able to, you know, solve problems, become solution based. What can we do to get their attention? You know, LeBron James has their attention. Drake has their attention. Beyonce, Jay-Z has their attention. Is there anything that our listeners can do? Is there anything that the mother or father that's home is trying to figure out, you know, what to do this summer with their child or which way to go? What can we do? You know, you may have members of the congregation thinking the same thing. What can we do to get their attention so they don't end up being a casualty of what's taking place in society?
I throw that to my educator, and then I come back with that.
Well, I think it starts at home. It does start at home, and it's reinforced and taught in school. But I think sometimes parents, even educators, are guilty of this. Some caregivers, we unintentionally give our children too much. We reward them with material things that they haven't worked for all the time. And so we've got to teach them the value of working hard and pushing themselves and a sense and how you get a sense of accomplishment when you do those things. They have to understand that because they want all these things. So but you have to teach them how we get those things, how it means working hard, how it means being responsible. And then two, how you can be supported, how they can be supported as a family. You know, how you can bring your family aboard. But that has to start at home. And then also in schools, the entrepreneurial courses and the group mentality, that has to be enforced and taught there as well. So I think that's how you start there, because you've got to teach it to them. They are not learning that. We are in a capitalistic society. The individual is praised. And so we need to do that. And also maybe we can take some of these people, Jay-Z, you mentioned other people, show how they are giving back to the communities, how, and highlight that aspect of what they're doing, because the children are focusing in only on the material things and the popularity of the one person. But if you can take those people and then tell some of their stories and how they've really given back to their community, some of the sports people, Dwayne Wade, and, you know, many of them who are really giving back and doing a lot for their communities, that kind of work is really not the focus or the main thing. So maybe you can start there. But we've got to teach our children how to become independent and the responsibility and the work behind that. That's the missing piece.
Gotcha. My father used to say to me growing up, he says, you make a dollar, you save a quarter. Mm. You have to begin in our schools. Our families have to begin to respect the value of saving money. When you begin to understand, for example, and we talk in church about tithing, what that does is that puts you in right relationship. Mm. And if you're not in right relationship, then all everything, if the center's not together, everything falls apart.
Right.
So one of the challenges that we have within our local community is that we have abandoned savings. I mean, I remember I would go to my grandmother. I could never believe it. Mm-hmm. If I would ask her for something, she could stick her hand in her bosom mm-hmm. and pull out her little AT machine and would have for me what I asked.
Mm-hmm.
Man, can you go to somebody now and ask that? Mm-hmm. No, you can't. So we've got to begin to teach young people. Every young person in Baltimore City should have a savings account.
Mm-hmm.
They should save money. Why? Because money grows. That's a basic of economic system.
Right.
Man makes money. People work for you, you make money. Your money makes money.
Mm-hmm.
It's only three M's to the economic system. And we've got to teach young people that they have to save. Why? Because money grows over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a dollar today, man, you save it today, what is a dollar 10 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're going to spend everything we have, if we're going to live in a credit dependent and not be credit free, then you will never be independent. You will always be dependent on this system.
Well, I remember I went to an event where Joe Dudley of Dudley Hair Care Products was there, who is self-made multimillionaire now. But he talked about how when he was a child and then when he started to grow his business, he would go to the bank and save 50 cents a week, 50 cents a week. And they said the people at the bank used to laugh at him. And he said that if you're not saving, it doesn't matter what the amount is, but if you're saving something, he said, if you're not saving money, the seed of success is not in you.
Right.
And that just hit home to me. And now this man again runs a multi-million dollar company, but it started out from the seed. It started out from planting that seed at a very young age. So that's so important that you hit on that and just really teaching at a young age. And also sometimes you have to make it fun.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make it relatable.
Yeah.
One thing that I love about you, Reverend Hathaway, is your message and your sermons always you relate it to today.
Mm-hmm.
You relate the word to how can when I come on Sunday, I'm looking for something that I can relate to on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing in the same process when we talk about relating to our children. I know that's something that I do with my children in talking about money. When they get money, a lot of times that's the first thing they want to do is go out and buy something. But say, no, this is what you're going to set aside and make it fun. One thing that blessed me, and I'll share this story, is we had Harvest Sunday
mm-hmm.
at our church at Speak to My Heart Ministries last Sunday, where every person, every adult who was able to do so was asked to give a seed offering of $100 into the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so my children, when we came into church, I said, well, listen, this is Harvest Sunday. I said, you know, I'm not going to give you the dollar to put in church. You put your own money in church mm-hmm. that you've gotten. And so my daughter's sitting there writing out her envelope, Reverend Hathaway, came in and she takes out a $5 bill. I said, okay, you know, I told her what, you know, that she's seeding into her future. Then she takes out a $1 bill. Then she said, you know what? She takes out a $20 bill. So here you have a 9-year-old put in a $26 seed for her future. And it just blessed me because it's like, wow, you know, that's something that has to be taught and has to be fostered, you know, over a period of time, that, you know, we have to be able to seed in our future. And as you mentioned, you know, as it says in the word, will a man rob God? You know, and how will I rob thee in the tithes and offerings? So that was just so on point, because a lot of times we look at just putting a Band-Aid on the situation or not really getting to the core of why it may not be happening for you financially. And that's because you're not in right relationship.
Yeah, it is that. And you know, the other scripture reference says it's more blessed to give than receive, you know, because if you got the ability to give, it is more blessed than to be in need. And so I think that the challenge for us, and I will just, because I think it's so important, is every child, particularly in our African-American community, should minimally have a savings account. And there should be some regular discipline of placing money into that. Then they have to learn not to spend everything that they get. Money can't be so hot that it just has wings on it. And as soon as you get it, it flies away. And not having that discipline. I went in 1987 to Korea, because the challenge I had was, why were these Korean Americans coming to America and seemingly to be so successful right in our own communities? And I wanted to understand it. So I spent 2 weeks over there. I talked to a lot of people. And what I learned was that they did not have a credit society.
Mm-hmm.
They learned to pay cash for everything that they got.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant that you had to have a discipline around savings.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately when they came over here, and people that were credit challenged, mm-hmm. somebody walks into you and opens up a suitcase full of cash,
mm-hmm.
immediately you think, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to take that cash.
Right.
But for them, that's how they operate as a community.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find many other communities operate that way.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to learn in our community to operate in a similar manner.
Wow, that's powerful. That whole cash and carry is always the best policy.
Oh, yes.
Always the best policy. So as we only have a couple minutes left here in the show, and again, we're just really having a conversation about independence, growing independence, and again, independence is different for everyone. So I just want to ask you all, just from your perspective, just from your life experiences, we're all a sum total of what our life experiences have brought us to until this day. What does independence look like to you? What does independence look like to you on this Eve Independence Day?
Well, independence, going off of what Dr. Hathaway said first, it is financial freedom, not being credit dependent in debt. That gives you a sense of freedom like no other. That, and also, again, you mentioned earlier taking care of yourself, being in a position to, do things and to be responsible. But also independence, again, for my community, because I can only get so far and do so much if it's just me. So me, I use my independence and what I've learned to teach others, mm-hmm. And that is why I'm teaching. So I get a sense of freedom and independence knowing that I have imparted some knowledge on someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why I do what I do. So independence to me is that financial independence, being able to work in my community to create opportunities for other ones to gain their independence. But most importantly, to be able to teach, to have opportunities, to be able to teach children so that they can define what independence is for themselves, and so that they can work towards, have set goals, and learn how to work towards becoming what independent and knowing what freedom is and defining that for themselves.
Awesome, awesome. Rev?
Yeah, one of the things, and I will say that your mother has played a role in this, is that we have to make certain that our young people understand that they are world citizens. So within our church, we make certain that the young people in our church get an international travel experience. If you see yourself in a bigger context than a neighborhood or a corner, then you begin to understand and function in a different way. And so freedom really is the ability to dream and realize that you are a citizen of the world. When you're a citizen of the world, man, can you imagine that all the resources of the world are there available for you? All of the ideas and all of the beauty and all of the warmth and pleasure and opportunity is available. That's what we got to make sure that we impart in our young people, that you are citizens of the world.
Wow, that's powerful. Well, we'd like to thank all of our callers. I'd like to also thank Dr. Reverend Hathaway for coming in. I'd also like to thank Kimberly Wilson for coming into the show today. This is our first edition of the Eagle's Nest here on WOLB 1010 AM. We welcome you to come back and join us. We will be here every Thursday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Just talking about issues that are relevant. We know that eagles only fly with eagles. And I will tell you, as Martin Luther King once said, if you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be a sun, be a star, for it isn't by size that you win or you fail, but be the best at whatever you are. Take care, take charge, and God bless. Have a safe and wonderful holiday weekend. We'll see you next time.
Oh man, I appreciate you, man.